Well, welcome to This Black Girl Podcast. I am one half of your host, Ola.Miss.Lola on Instagram.
And I am the other half of your lovely host at The Hill Diva on Instagram, but you could always refer to me as Hill Diva.
And we have a special guest on this episode. We have Stanley, also known on Instagram as Funny Man Stan.
Hey, guys. Thank you. Yeah, that's me. I'm a comic from New York. Thanks for having me.
Of course, it's our pleasure. So aside from being, are you like full-time comedian, part-time comedian, day job, nightlife, double life? Like what's the dealio with this?
I got a day job still. I do comedy at night when I can. I was co-hosting and co-producing a show in Woodside, Queens, but that venue went away. But now we are currently co-hosting and co-producing a show called The Friday Special at the Tiny Cupboard in Bushwick in Brooklyn. So, you know, if you've heard of the Tiny Cupboard, you're more than welcome to come through. I work during the day and tell jokes at night.
I love it. And then you also said that you have your own podcast show or shows. Can you tell us a little bit more about those?
Yeah. So I was doing a solo for a bit, but I brought back a good friend of mine as a co-host. It's called That's My Shit Podcast. We just basically talk about shit we like. Usually it's food, video games, technology, things like that. And then, you know, anything weird happens in the news, obviously we get on that. I also co-host Nobody's Movie Reviews. We review movies, as the title would indicate. We just did an episode today. It drops tomorrow morning. We just did Black Widow. So, you know, if you haven't seen Black Widow, don't watch our, because we will spoil the fuck out of it. But if you want to get ahead of the curve, next week we're reviewing Space Jam Legacy. So you can watch that and check out a review.
Nice. Okay, and so for Black Widow, because I know that was anticipated and then delayed and then brought back and then delayed. I guess out of how many I don't know, out of how many spiders, out of five spiders, what would you rate Black Widow?
I would give it 4.5 spiders out of 5.
Ooh. Okay, Scarlett.
As a big nerd, there's one thing, I'm not going to spoil it, but there's one thing I wish, you know, this had been a little bit better, but other than that, I thought it was great.
Really? Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Gotta see it then, yeah.
Highly recommended. It's definitely worth the $30 extra to the Disney Plus subscription that I paid. I mean, I would have definitely seen it in theaters, but if you're not comfortable in theaters just yet, I don't blame you. It's well worth, I think, $30 is what you're spending extra in the ticket you're spending, so you can spend it in the comfort of your own house.
Exactly.
That is true. You just set up a whole bunch of blankets, some snacks, drink. Don't have to sneak alcohol into the theater.
You can pause it, go to the bathroom. It's great.
Drink as much as you want. If you need liquor, you're good. No extra fees for that.
Would you, I guess you said you're kind of a nerd. Are you definitely like self-proclaimed nerd, or are you just copying the title just to cop?
I was definitely I was a nerd growing up. I'm a nerd now. I've always been a nerd. I was always into Marvel, a little bit into DC. I'm also like a big sports nut. So I'm a big Mets fan. I actually have the logo tattooed on my chest right here.
Oh, damn. You got to show that. Don't go halfway. Love it.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
That's the M?
The NYM. I've shown it off. Like, I went to a Mets game in 2019 and like it was a big game and they came back in the bottom of the 9th and won. I took my shirt off and people were like, is that a Yankee tattoo? I was like, well, first of all, why would I be here? two, if you know your logos, you'd know that the M, that the Y in the Mets logo curls.
Right.
Yankee logo, so let's not put any weird things on me right now. But yeah, I'm a big sports nerd. I'm a big Marvel guy. Star Trek, Star Wars, the whole nine. You name it, I'm into it.
That's funny. I like that. Because I was going to ask, I'm like, are you Marvel or DC? But you said that you're more a Marvel fan than a DC
definitely
fan.
More,
so
yeah.
I'm like,
definitely more. All right. I like my heroes grounded in reality.
I mean, that's fair. That's fair. I became more of a Marvel fan with the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe just because the sequence of events and the way that they put it together and marketed it and wrote it could literally be a university course.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is phenomenal.
Now there's four TV shows and I mean they've all hit it out of the park. They don't miss.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I feel like DC tends to miss the mark and they struggle and it's like you're too focused on what Marvel is instead of trying to be what you are.
Right. I didn't hate DC, but I think DC has better villains, but they just don't know how to bring those villains correctly to the screen. And it's been an issue they've had for a long time now.
So quickly, I hate to interject,
but
as a non comic book nerd,
okay,
please clarify for me, Marvel and DC, what I like, Superman and Batman, like what is the difference between?
So DC has been around longer. They started off as they were Detective Comics. That's where the acronym comes from, and like the 20s and 30s. So there's the Golden Age, the Silver Age, and the it kind of evolved into that. So Batman, Superman, all that stuff is Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Legion of Doom, all that is DC. And then I guess in the 60s, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby a lot of those guys, they created Marvel, starting off with Fantastic Four and X-Men and Spider-Man and evolved into Thor. And he evolved from there. So at some point, it would have been the 80s, DC started kind of like taking over as the more popular version. And then Marvel, in order to keep up, sold a lot of the rights to their property. So like that's why Sony makes Spider-Man and other companies would make, whatever other movie. So like, I guess right around when Kevin Feige and them decided to create the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they started buying up all that property back. And right now, I think they just got X-Men back. And I think Spider-Man is still Sony owned, but they kind of like...
It is. They have this weird kind of like co-ownership going on.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So, which is, it's... What I'm looking forward to is, the way they kind of brought back, they're bringing back the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man and then doing the multiverse. Yeah. And I mean, I could go on and on, but what Marvel's been able to do over the last 15 years is incredible.
Amazing. Like I said, it could literally be a course in like university to study and understand. But long story short, like certain characters that are like Thor, Spider-Man, Iron Man, She-Hulk, the Incredible Hulk, all of those are Marvel characters. While like Batman, Wonder Woman, the Joker, the Flash, all of those, they're DC characters.
Yeah.
And they usually have a different type of feel in terms of like how they're presented even cinematically, whether it's TV shows or movies. And I guess that's more of a director's choice, but
yeah, I like DC characters, but it's like a lot of their movies tend to be like they're trying to make them a little more adult, a little more gritty, which is fine, but I think where they kind of miss the mark is a lot of the casting choices, a lot of the directorial choices, like with Marvel, they've gone out of their way to like really find the right people, the the right fit. You know, the casting choices of Robert Downey Jr. and the casting choices of Chris Hemsworth playing Thor. I feel like every step of the way they've made the right choices.
That's fair. That's fair.
I wanted to ask a quick question just about your other side of your life as Mr. Funny Man. So in terms of you being a podcaster or a comedian, do you kind of define yourself more as a comedian or more as a personality? And on the comedy side, how did you find breaking into that form of, you know, expression?
I definitely identify more as a comedian than a podcaster or a personality. I think even as a comedian, I feel like my strength is writing. Rather than performing, I think I'm a good performer, especially like in the right environment. You know, just the other night I was at a show. It was a rooftop show in Brooklyn, and I was doing a joke I do all the time, and one thing led to another, and I ended up taking my shirt and my pants off. I'm still not sure why I did it. There was someone in the audience that just kept like, I don't know, just kind of goading me into it. And I was like, all right, well, I mean, here we go.
We might have to goad him into it now, okay? We might have to replay this joke.
I do this, you know, and it's, I don't know if this is a good segue for you, but I do a joke about, you know, dating apps and, you know, things like that. So I talk about how, you know, I'm in my mid-30s and, like, dating has changed over the years and, like, you know, you have all these apps, and I'm on all the apps. I'm on Bumble, I'm on Hinge, I'm on OkCupid, and I'm like, I'm even on Grindr. You know, I'm not even gay. I just really like compliments. I got a message on Grindr from a dude. I don't have a picture on Grindr. I don't. You know, I created it for fun, and then I guess I'm bi or whatever. But I created it, and like I got a message on Grindr one night, and I was like, the guy sent me, he was like, how big are you? I bet it's beautiful. And you know what? I had a great Tuesday. I had a really good Tuesday. Like, I was like, this is what a like, who needs therapy when I got random strangers complimenting my penis?
But you know what? I will say, I've never heard anyone call a penis beautiful. So I'm like,
really?
Take that. Like, I mean,
girl, I say all the time.
I would say, like, between girlfriends, like, between girlfriends, it's like, oh, yeah, you know, he whipped it out, and that shit looked beautiful. But, like, I don't know if I've ever really, aside from, like, my partner, be like, yo, that guy got a beautiful dick. Like,
girl, I've said it.
I think that, you know, it's we can admit that some of them out there are aesthetically pleasing, you know? If I can comment on a woman and say that woman has a beautiful body, you know, outside of whatever, I think, you know, why not start complimenting guys here and there?
But I think it's something that, because, like, no guy is really just walking around with his dick out for a girl to see, like, passing through the street. Like, dang, like, aside from, like, now the gray sweatpants and having the print now is now becoming a thing. Whereas, like, a girl can walk around in tight leggings, tight shirt, whatever, and you can see she has big breasts or she has a nice fat ass or whatever, to be like, ooh, dang, she got a nice ass, or ooh, she got some big old titties or whatever. You don't see that for a man, so it's like,
I don't think it's fair, to be honest with you. I don't think it's fair.
You can see a guy's booty, though. You can. You can tell if they have
that all the stuff. That is true. I see some nice booties. I'm like, yeah.
Now, do you guys catcall? If you guys see a guy with, like, he's wearing the gray sweatpants, because obviously he's doing it for attention. If you guys see a guy, are you going to comment? Do you guys catcall?
No. I don't catcall, but I will. Like, if a guy's in my space and he's trying to, you know, bring a talk or whatever, and I notice something nice, I'll be like, oh, you think you look nice because you got a cute old little butt under there or whatever. Like, you'll throw in that little sass in there. With my boyfriend, he's notorious for the print. And he tries to act like, oh, what are you talking about? And I'm like, look at you walking around the house like a slut. Like I get all out with this poor man. He knows, but I'm like, oh yeah, he'll want to like go out and just wear like sweats and like no boxers or something. I'd be like, for these hoes to see you all cover up yourself.
You think you are, sir?
Exactly. Full fledged. But I want to ask with the comedy, okay? Because obviously you're a naturally charismatic and like hilarious person. And you're on all of these apps. You're welcome, by the way. But do you flex? Do you try to like flex that funny chop in you when you're like trying to impress a person that you may find interesting, attractive, or appealing? Or do you rely on, I don't know, other charms, or I don't want to call it skills because I think pickup skills are corny, but like, is there anything else that you may use to like, I don't know, give yourself that edge above somebody else?
I don't think so. I think if I'm a 10 on stage, like in terms of like energy or whatever it is, off stage I'm very much not the opposite per se, but I'm definitely like low key and I'm quiet. Once I get comfortable with somebody that I like, you know, then, you know, the charm is turned up. And I tell people all the time, like I'm the most myself when I'm on stage. Like if I do well at a show, I don't think there's a woman in an audience that I can't talk to. Like it's just, if I do well, especially like if I, so there's a comic, Big J Okerson, and him and his girlfriend, or I guess I don't know if they're married, but they swing. They have threesomes or whatever, and his partner will bring women to a show, and he says it all the time. He's like, if I'm bombing, get out of there, like. But if I'm doing well, that's when I'm like, just because it's like I feel the exact same way. It's like if I'm doing well, I like my confidence is sky high, and like I'm very social. Like I'm a really good wedding date. I'm great at weddings. I get to peacock. I look nice and I hold court. And I'm telling jokes and here and there and like you know, but if I do a show where I'm doing well, I just want to get the fuck out of there. I'm like, no, I'm not.
Of course. I mean, I feel like that would be a natural response, you know, like even imagining if I'm performing anything, even if we're doing our show and we feel like, oh my God, we have nothing to talk about. Right. I really wouldn't want like a love interest to be watching, you know? But yeah. My question for you is, since you're such an introvert and you're more laid back, you know, as a person, what made you think like light bulb, I want to be on stage in front of everybody telling jokes, you know? Like how did you get the balls really to go for that, and what really manifested that dream in you?
So I've been a fan of comedy, you know, since I was a little kid. You know, talking about nerdy stuff, like I nerd out on stand-up. I grew up watching Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor, George Carlin. And then, you know, to me, it was just like, not that I wanted the attention, but it was just like, I like being funny. And then when I was in school, I'm an only child. That's the other thing too, is like, I like that part of that kind of like when it's weird. I told my therapist, this is like, I realized that I want attention on my terms. I like attention, but when I want it, and when sometimes I'll be left alone. And you know, looking back, there's pictures of me like, you know, Halloween, I'm always like the clown, or I'm always like, you know, trying to find the most outrageous costume I could find, something that's going to elicit some sort of response. And then I discovered I was a good writer in high school. I mean, even earlier than that. So I was always kind of a class clown. I was always a good writer, and like, I always liked attention. And I didn't know that stand-up was a thing that anybody could do. So by the time I got to college, I always talked about it. And my friends were like, dude, shut the fuck up and finally do it. So One day I decided, I started looking up open mics. I'm like, all right, if I'm gonna suck, I wanna suck for 5 minutes. I don't wanna go up there and like do like a minute and get the fuck off. Like, I was like, I'm gonna do it, I'm gonna commit to it. And I wrote, writing one day, and I'm just like, I wrote and wrote and wrote. None of it was good, but I was like, it's, if I'm gonna be bad, I'm gonna be bad for 5 minutes. And the first open mic I did, it was January of 2010. And I went to Eastville Comedy Club. I had a day job at the time. I got off of work. I went to I had a couple beers, maybe more than a couple, and didn't suck. I didn't suck. And I was like, okay, that was good. I like that. And I was like, I want to do it again. And the second time, I didn't suck. And I was like, all right, I think I'm okay. And then the third time I bombed. And I was like, all right, I still want to do it though. And that's what confirmed it. I was nice. At that point, there's nothing else I wanted to do ever again. I was like, this is it.
Wow.
I love that.
And do you find it to be hard to like make a living being a comedian, or do you find that it's something that is sustainable?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's such a grind. It's such a grind. There are so many comedians, not just in New York, but like there are so many comedians like all over the place. And you know, there's a lot of talented people out there that, you know, because the market is so saturated, you know, it's difficult to break through. Like, you know, New York is its own beast, LA is its own beast, and like, you know, I've had the opportunity, luckily, to travel. You know, I've performed in Pennsylvania, I've performed in Massachusetts, I've performed in Florida, and like I've gone to different places, and there are talented people. And you know, it's, some people go their entire careers and just never really break through because it's just any number of things. Sometimes it's luck, sometimes it's good or bad luck, mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, just a matter of the industry just not looking for whoever you are. Like I think, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things that I try to do now, especially that I'm 11 years in, is I try to do as many things as I can. You know, I try to make sure that I took sketch classes, and I'm like, all right, I can write sketches. I've got a packet that I can submit if I wanted to submit to Saturday Night Live, or, you know, that's really my ultimate goal. I would love to write for Saturday Night Live. And if that doesn't happen, you know, there are other avenues I can go into sketch writing. But, you know, writing is something that I know that I can open up another door.
Exactly. You
know, producing is another thing that I can do. And I think I'm a very good host, and like hosting is something that a lot of people don't enjoy doing. I happen to like it. So, you know, any opportunity to host, I take those opportunities. So it's a grind. I could sit here and name comic after comic after comic after comic that I think are insanely good, but just, you don't know who they are just yet.
Wow.
And you might never know who they are, but it's just the nature of the business.
That's wow.
Wow.
And with this grind, because like you said, you have a day job, you have a night job, you have like side jobs too that you're doing.
Yeah.
How, and like you also mentioned, you're on all of these different apps, you know, this, that, and how does that impact or affect your love life if you are entertaining one? Like, are you in a relationship right now? Are you single? Like,
So I'm single, but I have met somebody recently. We met on Hinge. So what's interesting, and it's really interesting because we haven't actually met, but we've been texting and FaceTiming for about a month now, because she's a costume designer, and she's in Mississippi filming a movie.
Ooh, nice.
We matched while she was already down in Mississippi, and we, like, it started off like, you know, messages here and there every couple of days or every other day, and then at some point we were just like, nah, let's exchange numbers, and that kind of evolved into like last week we had our first date on FaceTime. We both ordered burgers from wherever we were, and we did that. And she's coming back to New York in a couple weeks. So, you know, I think if all goes well, this will be, you know, something hopefully long term.
I love that.
To answer your question though, like it does, it does make it difficult because, you know, I've been doing stand up, you know, like I said, 11 years, and in that time, it's like, I can't speak for all comics because I just think differently because my instinct is to gravitate toward funny women and to gravitate toward female comedians. But I also don't want to make any female comedian feel like I'm only interested because of, you know, how they look. So I'm very cognizant of that, and like I'm very cognizant of how female comedians are treated in the industry. So, and also like, I don't like the shit where I eat. You know, like if it doesn't work out, I don't want to have to avoid a show. Lately, I have noticed like it's, you know, it's trending the other direction where a lot of comics, they are starting to date each other and it's starting to work out. But like, I don't know. It makes me feel weird because like, my biggest thing is I don't want to make anybody feel uncomfortable. So I don't even broach the subject. I think I've only hooked up like with a couple of comedians, and it, you know, that was it. And I never kind of pursued it. But on the flip side, it's like, it's also difficult to kind of be with someone who doesn't understand the industry from my perspective. It's like, the last girl I dated seriously, you know, we dated for like 10, 11 months, and that's my longest relationship. And it was a lot of, you know, it's just like, damn, like, I want to spend time with you, but I want to go to this show and I want to go to this open mic. And I got an opportunity in, I guess, 2018 to do this festival. And, you know, I got in and like I performed and but like I wanted to fully immerse myself in the festival and meet, you know, a lot of the people I look up to in the industry. And, you know, my ex at the time, you know, she wanted to go to the beach. And I was like, all right, I'll go to the beach. You know, I'm supportive. She wasn't feeling well, so she figured, you know, maybe some swimming would help her. She had hurt her leg. And I went to my show was, it was a whole weekend of shows. My show was one of the last ones on Sunday night. So Friday I convinced her to come out, and I did an open mic and I, you know, shook some hands and met some people. And then all day Saturday we spent at the beach, and then all day Sunday we spent at the beach, and then Sunday night we went to the show. And I didn't regret the time that we spent together, but in the back of my mind, I was like, I really do wish that I was at this festival. You know, meeting some people that I look up to. So it's tough.
Yeah, well, because networking is, especially for what you do, networking is super important.
Yeah.
In terms of like building those relationships, you can have like continuous work. And it's very important for somebody to understand like the nature of what you do. And I don't know, hopefully with this person, like this new person being in the film industry and like understanding that industry is a whole different beast in itself, but hopefully she'll have like an understanding of like where your focus is, where your career mind is and things like that. But I want to ask, because you did bring her up, you said like, you know, if hopefully in the next few weeks you guys can make things more real and more official and things, I've been asking everyone this, what was the deciding factor that made you decide like, she's a nice girl, whatever, she cute, she whatever, to being like, this is somebody I would like to pursue something long term?
So there was a point where we were, so on her Hinge profile, actually, she had a prompt that had something to, I forgot exactly what it was, but it was like sexiest president, or maybe first lady, and I can't, somehow we got started talking about Eleanor Roosevelt, and we instantly we had like started like working on like not working on, but it was like we had an inside joke already, and it was like she was able to get weird, and I like that. We were matching our weird,
you know. Yeah. So like, I like it. The weird waves were matching.
Yeah,
that, I love it.
And her first thing to me was like, she said, "Oh, I'm glad you're able to let me be weird." And I was like, "Oh, you have no idea."
Yeah. It's like welcome to Pandora's box,
right?
Yeah.
Like I can't tell you how many times I've like met people and like I gotta like hold back like the jokes that I want to make, and like sometimes, not that they're inappropriate. Ooh. Sometimes I'll say things and I'm just like, oh, that was weird, right? I'm sorry, that was too much too soon.
And then, too soon.
Yeah. They're like, oh, like, so like out of nowhere, we just started talking about how, like, just looking at Eleanor Roosevelt, I'm like, doesn't Eleanor Roosevelt seem like she like wore a strap on and had sex with Teddy, like, or Franklin, like she, because here's the thing about Franklin Roosevelt, like, he didn't use his legs. This is weird, but like, you know, she was having sex with like other dudes, and he was okay with it. He's probably watching. And Eleanor Roosevelt looks like a strong lady, and like she uses strap-ons and she pegs men, and that's the hill I'm gonna die on.
Why not? Why not? I'm dying because like my personal mantra has been for like the weirdness that's like in my life. Whenever somebody's like, why? I'm always like, why not?
Why not?
Why? And I just say it with like the crazy eyes and everything committed.
Yeah.
You're not.
That's what I'm saying. We don't know. We don't know. And it's like, we don't know what people were into. It's a funny thing to think about.
Of course. And it's like, if you can't laugh at like little things, then it's like, what can you really laugh at? And something like that is like, no disrespect, but homegirl's dead in the ground. So is her man.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's the for me, the backbone of a good relationship is being able to laugh with each other.
Yeah.
Like making cracking jokes. And you know, one of the other things too, that very early on, it's weird. We hit it off so like immediately because like she had it in her profile that she went to Ohio State University. And even though I didn't go there, I got into the University of Miami, and I've been a fan of the University of Miami football team since I was like 9-10 years old. Wow. And they happened to play each other in 2002, and my Ohio State won controversially. So one of the first things I said to her was like, you know, I just hope you know that Ohio State University owes us a championship and we can discuss. And she, like, right away, she was like, no, you know, you guys suck and you guys lost. And I was like, oh, here we go. So, like, all these little personal things that we can kind of vibe on, I think those are the things that I like.
That's yeah, awesome. I definitely value that too. And it's funny because, like, the moment you said, you know, when you can just be, you're kind of weird with the person, like that resonated. I felt that so deep because I'm unique. I like to say unique. I don't usually use the word weird, but I guess that is another way of describing it for sure. But I get that. Like when you, I'm personally in the dating pool as well. I'm not on Hinge anymore. I used to be, but I'm on Tinder and Facebook dating. So,
okay.
I get it when you say like that right kind of weird and you can just be yourself around someone because not everybody like will understand your jokes. And sure. I make very disrespectful, morbid sometimes jokes. Yeah. So it's like, and I no filter, I just let it go. I don't care if mommy's there, if granny hears, whatever. Hopefully they have a good sense of humor. You know what I mean? So that is so true. Like you have to be able to kind of be naked humor wise with the person. And that's when you know, I feel like.
The thing that I realized, and I hope more guys start to realize it, like it's as weird as it is for like guys on dating apps, because you know you can send 100 messages and get no responses, but like I see some of the messages that women get. I do not envy you guys at all. Like the closest I've gotten are like some of the messages that I've gotten from dudes on Grindr. I'm like, okay, this is why, guys, we need to be better.
I'm so glad you can see it from that perspective. I wish all men could see it from this perspective. Absolutely. Like they all should be forced to have a Grindr account before they even get an account for women, like for freaking Bumble or Hinge or anything. Yeah. Like they need to see what we go through. I like that. One second, y'all. But I'm gonna open my window because I look like I'm in a wax museum and I am sweating like a little pig in this little room up in my upstairs. Okay,
like a sinner in church, girl.
Honest to God, like I don't want to look like a runner on a track star. Exactly.
No, girl, it's so funny. I mean,
guys are so like wild, man. And I like that's I try to you know, I hope this is the last like time I ever have to like. Send a message on a dating app or anything like that. I don't like the world. Yeah.
You're ready to put down the torch.
Yeah. I'm 36. I remember not having a cell phone, meeting girls on like the bus after school and like remembering numbers, having a pen and paper and like having to like actually have a conversation. Like that's also where like my sense of humor came from. Like having to go up to somebody who you've never met, you have no idea who they are, to elicit some sort of reaction and get their number is like insane that we did that. We did that as young people. And I see young people now, it's like, you are the end of civilization.
It's like, true. I don't understand children. It's just, I don't know. I personally felt like when I was using dating apps that a lot of the perspective was just like, are you down to fuck? Here's a dick pic. What you doing? Oh, you're sexy. And it's just like, it's funny because like the guy that I'm with now, like we met on Hinge and his response wasn't like a reply to like any of my photos or anything like everyone else. It was more like answering one of those like prompted questions.
Yeah.
And he answered it and he put like reasons why he answered it. And I was like, I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And because it like it creates a reason to have a convert like a chill conversation that doesn't revolve around, you know, sex and hooking up and things like that. You get to know and understand another person. And like now, like we're the greatest of friends. We have a million inside jokes. We get along. Mm-hmm. Things are great, whatever. But like I just wish sometimes men online would just like talk to me like one of your homeboys. Like I know you guys have stupid jokes, you guys have fart jokes, you talk about sports, like girls have that too, but I don't know if it's like they don't realize or they don't care or because they're just so focused.
Well, there are no stakes. You know, that's the problem I have with online dating is like there are no stakes. A lot of the things that guys do online, they would never do in person because that's obviously, you know, you might get your ass kicked doing that. But because there's no stakes and like, okay, you say no or you don't like it, there's somebody else that I haven't done that to yet. So I'm just gonna keep casting the net and go and I'm fishing. Just like on the other end, you have that my issue has always been you know, it's the filtering out of things that you don't like. Like I'm not the tallest guy in the world. I'm only 5'6". But like there are women that might not even be like probably like 5'2", 5'3", but they're like, I don't want a guy under 6 feet tall. Now, you're entitled to that, but like if we were in person and I came up to you and I was my normal funny self, my height might not matter. But all of a sudden you filtered out this entire pool of people and then it's like a cycle. Because you have these short guys or guys that are under 6 feet that are like angry because some, you know, some girl doesn't want to even talk to them because they're because of a not even a defect, just like a physical thing. Like I matched with a girl on Tinder, and in my Tinder profile it says 5'6" but 5'9" in heels, and she messaged me, completely missed it. And she said, how tall are you? And I said, well, how much do you weigh? And she was like, that's disrespectful. Why would you say that? And I was like, listen, you came at me first with stuff that I can't, at least you can lose weight. I can't get taller. Yeah, so like, how do you, like, it's unfair. Now, granted, I don't care how much you weigh. Like, I'm just pointing out how, I'm pointing
the
out
hypocrisy.
The hypocrisy, right.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's funny though, I was gonna say, it's funny though, because you brought up height. Like, I'm a tall woman. I am 5'10".
Okay.
And I am a fullback stallion. I'm very tall. So, like, I personally prefer guys that are taller than me, because everybody else is already shorter than me. I want, like, something different, you know? But
yeah,
it's very, I don't know, like, I usually find myself discriminating out of that pool, but that's just because, like, me personally, I find it very hard. It's not impossible, but I find it harder for me to be attracted to, like, shorter men, just because the few shorter men that I have dated, like, I haven't had the best experience with it. So I'm like, you know what? They're insecure. Let me just look up.
Absolutely. Right?
But I do definitely agree with the hypocrisy of, like, if somebody's, like, 5'2",
yeah,
you can date somebody that's 5'6", 5'8". Like, that's not going to hurt you. Leave the tall men for the tall women, please. Like,
right.
We need that. I'm actually 5'3", okay? Putting it out there. I'm 5'3", and I am not a height snob in any way. Like, I don't care how tall or short the guy is, but because I do have a preference to short guys because I dance. So if you can dance salsa or, you know, bachata, merengue, it's just a little more sensual when the guy's short. And, like, okay, you can, you know, even when you're twerking, like, twerking on a tall guy's kneecaps is not, you know, attractive for me. So I'm like, I don't mind my short guys. It's okay. But, like, in respect to online, though, one thing I can't stand about online dating is, like you mentioned, the whole, you know, having a preference for, you know, tall or whatever. For me, I can't stand keyboard warriors that when you are online, you're constantly saying stuff. And then if you finally get my number, all you're doing is texting. I'm always busy. I'm a busy mom. You know, I work, we do our podcast. I'm constantly doing things with my family. You know, I'm busy living my life. And I'm like, who has time all the time to be texting? And a lot of these people who are born in this age of, you know, computers and IBM and Messenger and all this, they're only confident on the keyboard. You know what I mean? And they would, like you said, they will say things that they never say to your face as a woman too.
Right.
Like, I literally had one guy that was like messaging me, hey, how are you? I'm good. It was quiet for a little while, and all of a sudden, I like boobies. And I'm like, what? Like, you would never say that to my face. Where does that come in this conversation? Like, it was so awkward. And it was the same person that would not call me, would only text. For me, instant, right off.
That's because there's no consequence. A guy comes in public, you're at the mall and, you know, you're shopping, and the guy, he's not going to do that because you'll probably slap him, you know, like. It's just like, I'm glad I grew up and did, because I learned through trial and error and through rejection. And, you know, eventually I figured out how to talk to people, not just women, just people in general. Like, I generally enjoy talking to people. It's one of the things in stand-up that I enjoy doing. I like talking to audiences. I like somebody sitting in the front row. And, like, I know people are scared to sit in the front row of a comedy show, but I don't bite. And I really want to know who you are and why you're here and what makes you laugh. Because if I find out more about you, I can make you laugh. And that's, who doesn't want to laugh? Everybody.
True.
Like, I like going to the grocery store and, like, you know, seeing somebody, like, I'll ask somebody, like, why did you pick that watermelon? What's good about that one? Like, you know, I'll just start a conversation. And people are so weird about it. People are like, ugh, like, why are you talking?
I mean, that's fair. You know? I will admit, I'm a self-admitted weirdo. I, most times, for the most part, keep to myself. And I, like, keep my little circle of people. So, like, if you randomly came up to me and you're like, yo, why'd you pick that pineapple? I'd be like, what do you mean? Leave my pineapple. Like, I'd be like, I would be one of those people giving you a weird look. Or I'd be like, because I wanted it, and just, like, put it in my basket and dip. But I don't know. Maybe that's more of a skill that I personally need to work on, just because I find that if I don't do that, I'll run into somebody who will tell me their whole life story. And it's like, I don't care.
Yeah. There's just a certain level of social awkwardness that I think, like, nowadays, notice people don't even, you know, people are on their phones and people don't interact anymore. Like, one of my favorite situations to be in, even though it's like terrible is like when you're on the train and the train stops, or like something, or like a homeless guy gets on the train and something weird happens, or there's a fight, and it's like back in the day, like, you know, I remember when I was younger, something like that would happen, and then like you turn to somebody you don't even know and be like, that was weird, wasn't it? And you'd have a conversation about how weird it was.
I know.
And now it's like, I'm just gonna not make eye contact. I'm like, I kind of miss that.
It's so true. That is very true. I do kind of feel like the social landscape has changed now that everybody's heads down in their phones now. Like, it's so rare to have candid conversation with people. And like, my last candid conversation, I think, was like a day ago with some random man at like the breakfast place, talking about, we're just so happy to be outside that we're just like, oh my God, the restaurant, you know, like we're outside. You know, we're like, hopefully we don't shut down again. But, and it was weird. It's so weird talking to people now. It's like, and now you're even scared of them coughing.
Oh my gosh. You know, I see somebody without a mask, I get a little tense, but I'm like, I'm still, you know, it's like, it's just in my nature to talk to people. I like one of the things I've had this guy, I've kind of joked around about it, but I have an idea for an app where it doesn't let you see anybody outside of 5 miles. Because you think about like our parents, like my parents are from Haiti, and they met because they worked with each other. Like they that's how they met. And like, I think about my grandparents met because they were just like, it was proximity. Like, I think there should be an app where it's like, these are the only people available to you that that just, you know, this is it. It's called, I don't know what to call it, but it's like, here, you know, whatever. It's like, you know, just, because that's how our parents met. It was like, this is the closest person to us that wasn't our cousin. It's like, oh, just don't fuck your cousin. That's what I want to
call. I understand.
It's going to be called don't fuck your cousin.
Yeah. So feel me. I understand that, but I would point out a quick, small, problematic issue with that is that one of my girlfriends who was on Tinder, and she had her kilometer like meter set to around like 10 kilometers. She said that every guy she went on a date with had the same set of girls on their Facebook friends list. And every time she clicked on that girl would have the same set of guys that she was already talking to. So everyone was just dating everyone and like spreading like you're in the same pool as everybody. So she didn't like that. So then she said it further. So I feel like there's makes also sense. Problems with that too, right? Makes the pool smaller.
No, that definitely makes sense. You know, one of my younger cousins, actually, it's funny. I baptized her she's my goddaughter. And she's in her 20s now, and she's dating. And I'm just like, it's weird. It's weird that you're dating. Okay. And she'll like, I tell her she can be completely honest with me and tell me, you know, what's going on. I could talk to her. And she was telling me that she had gone on a date with a guy, and then like, it turns out he's friends with a guy she dated like a few months prior because, you know, it was they're so it's so close. So I do understand that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the little fish pond mindset is just so. I don't know, it's so weird, and I don't know what it's like in New York, but like I found personally growing up that not necessarily when I was like in like university or anything, but definitely in high school, it was like you couldn't talk to a certain guy because there was a friend of a friend that liked him, and then that made you look like a certain way, or that guy has dated like this girl before that you know, and or you heard a rumor about this guy when he was dating this girl. And it was just, there was a lot of mess, a lot of friend-cest.
friend-cest.
I went to a pretty small college. It was only, there were 3,000 students total. And I think only 1,000 of us lived on campus. So we all knew each other. It's weird to have that college experience in such a small community, because like, it's funny, like on a Thursday night, cause there were no classes on Friday. So on a Thursday night, you know, people were going out and you'd see them dressed up going out. And then the next morning I'd see the same girl that was like all dressed up the night before. And now she's got her hair in the
thing. The Maxi bun.
Right. And then, we're at breakfast together. Cool. So like I think that's one of the reasons I didn't really date in college, because it was like, it just seemed like everybody around was like, oh, but I know what you look like in pajama pants. Like, it's like, whatever. Like,
yeah.
Like, everybody seems to try to impress everybody. Like, where are you guys from? Where are you guys from?
We're from Toronto, Canada.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so we're north of the border.
I should have known. You know, you said Toronto.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're Canadian.
Well, that's cool. Yeah. Like,
do you guys, because, you know, TikTok has taught me a lot about Toronto.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Okay. Obviously, a lot of West Indian people up there.
Yep.
So, are you guys more of a, you guys go after the roadmen, as they say? Or are you guys?
What do you mean?
What is that? I could never. Oh, the roadmen are like, yo, wagwan. Wagwan, girl, like, I seen you for a while still, and I was just trying to, like...
Oh, the actual Toronto man.
Yes, yeah. Girl, could never, would never, should never. Do not recommend.
I actually ended up... That's hilarious, because same here. I'm very turned off by that accent. Yeah. I actually was set up on a blind date.
Oh.
Yes, a little while back, and I saw a picture. I was shown a picture of this guy. I'm like, okay, you know what? He's decent, whatever. Show up to the date. The man opened his mouth, and literally, it was my first time meeting a real life road man. And I, because I know the Toronto accent, and I live in the suburbs, so I'm going to put that out there. I did not grow up in Toronto. I grew up in the suburbs. I was like the only black chick, or one of like, you know, 2, 3 to 4 and like maximum 5 black chicks in my class growing up. So it was a very, very, you know, suburban area, not very multicultural when I was growing up. Now it's changed. But so when I seen this guy and he was acting like, yeah, man, I'm hungry still, you know, I want to get some still. I'm like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, is that your serious voice? He's like, yeah, man, still, you know, I'm Toronto, still, like, don't, no. I couldn't believe it. It's a real, I thought the man was joking. I thought the Toronto man accent was a joke. I didn't realize.
It's funny.
It's a culture. It's a whole culture.
I remember when she told me this story, because, like, I had to tell her, like, yeah, it's a real thing. Because, like, I live in the city. I was born and grew up in the city for most of my life. At one point, I did move out to the suburbs, but then I moved back. And, like, but that's how everybody is. Like, I'll throw in like a little fam and wagwan and all of that from then. But like, there are actual like mans on road that are like, yo, like, wagwan, my you, like, you know, like the whole thing, the whole nines. And I just find it so funny, because like even just earlier today, like before we came in to have this chat, I was in the elevator and some guy was on the phone and he's like, yo, man, I just got home still. I have to work, though, in like 2 hours, dog. And then the guy's on the phone like, yo, for real? And he's like, yeah, man. And it's funny because it's like such a blanket accent that's covered the city, even though it has roots in like West Indian and Jamaican culture.
Yeah.
This was a brown guy talking like this.
Yeah.
It's true. It's so true.
So blanketed that whether you're brown, white, black, like as long as you're Toronto, like, it's always that.
That's your accent.
Like,
are we blessed?
No, you're blessed though.
Yes, blessed.
Oh, blessed. Oh, God, yo, go check still, then I'll be blessed. Like,
yeah.
One, like, I cannot like that in forget.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's like it's very weird because you'll see Asian kids, Indian kids, Spanish kids just throwing around the N-word, and I'm just like, it's a cultural thing, because it's like growing up, everybody's around everybody, so it's like, I have white friends that you know that'll be like, yeah, what's going on, my nigga, like, it's like, I'm like, what? Okay, all right, this is strange, but this is where we live.
Wow. But you see, I don't know, like those ones, like. Cause I have like few, I don't even want to call them friends no more, like more acquaintances that, because they, you know, grew up in the hood, even though they're not black, but they grew up in the hood and they got some, you know, friends and be like, yo, what up, my nigga? Yo, I'm just blessed out here in these streets, my nigga. And I'm like, you are not a Negro. Like,
yes, I did experience the same thing growing up. Like, people who just had a hard, who felt like they had a hard life would be using the N-word more than me. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I just never used it. I never really did, you know? Yeah. I just never felt comfortable using it. And the education about whether or not you should use it and the actual Black stories and stuff are so badly taught in Canada. Like, the Black history you know and what we knew coming out of school, two completely different things. All we knew was, like, Harriet Tubman, railroad slaves, and then, you know, we also learned about natives, you know, Jacques Cartier. I was in French, so I learned about French stuff.
Yeah,
but like, it was so watered down, so nowhere near the real history.
Yeah, like
crazy.
I'm pretty sure like all you know is like the Underground Railroad, that there were slaves in the United States, and that through the Underground Railroad they came to Canada to find freedom. Like,
right.
So, but like,
we're the figures, yeah.
Your education is pretty good, right?
It's somewhat decent, but in terms of having like a whole, or at least a general education, like, we're having a huge issue and uprising right now, especially with the Native Americans in our country, and like the mistreatment and systemic racism and abuse against them. And that's becoming more of like a vocal and awareness. But like, all we ever learned about growing up about Native Americans was like the fur trade, and that the first department in the country was founded from the fur trade, and that there was like different native bands and native tribes, and that's it. Like, nobody tells you what happens in residential areas. Nobody taught, we were never taught about residential schools, and we were getting taught now, which is not cute. Nobody told you that, like growing up, I thought most of our because I know you guys have like CPS down there, we have CAS, which is the same thing.
Oh yeah, okay.
I was taught, or at least I was led to believe, that a majority of children in CAS was Black, when actually 50% of children in CAS were like Native children.
Yeah, in Canada, Native. Yeah,
you know, it's funny it's not really funny, but like when you look at what we're taught, and even in different countries, like, you know, similar to that, like, you know, the common rhetoric is like, oh, Black on Black crime, and there's a statistic that's been going around lately that they say that 50% of violent crime is committed by 90%. Whatever, it's like most of the violent crime are committed by Black people, which isn't true. Like, that's the stat that like Republicans like down here will throw in people's faces, talk about, like, you know, crime rates and things like that. But when in reality, those numbers are based on arrests, which doesn't indicate, you know, how many people are falsely accused, are falsely arrested, and are eventually let go.
Right.
When you look at like the history of like a lot of countries, really, you know, Canada, here in the US, like, there's a curriculum that we're taught for a reason. Like, there are people who are this is where we're meant to be taught. So, you know, I totally understand where you're coming from with that.
And one thing I would like to add to that is that it's so true. And at this point, with what we're finding out about, for example, thanks to like Instagram, I learned that a lot of Black cities, historically Black cities and towns that were burnt down, similar to Tulsa, Oklahoma, have been dug out and made lakes. They destroyed them, they burnt them. All of these Black communities that were actually, you know, having thriving communities and rich, you know, business people that were of Black, you know, color descent, were destroyed, right? And you would never know that. So how can we call the curriculum even a curriculum when it's literally a brainwash, it's a whitewashing of the event, to so that we don't know the real history right? The natives, right. For example, not knowing, you know, all of these bodies of bones of little children were found and have yet to be dug up. You know, nobody knew about this, right? So
it's like, but like they say, history is written by the victors, you know? Like, but I'm glad stuff like that is coming out now. Like, yeah, I'm glad that stuff like that is coming out now because like I said, being Haitian and people are now starting to find out, you know, Haiti had to pay reparations to France for like to the tune of about $72 billion if you count for inflation.
Right.
And you look at, you know, now with the president having been assassinated, now people are starting to find out, oh, Haiti's been, you know, run through, like the US came in and raided, other countries came in and raided, the UN came in the early 1900s, the Dominican Republic came in and like slaughtered 20,000 Haitians in the early 1920s. And all these things, you know, are just, you know, that was, you know, one of the reasons why I had to step back, because I have friends that are Trump supporters, and like, you know, I don't really care who the president is, but when Trump came out and said that Haiti was a shithole country, I was like, that's where I take offense. I'm like, all right, say what you will about whatever you want to say, but then when you start calling other countries like Haiti a shithole, having done nothing to help and only hurt the country, you know?
Yeah, it's like
that's where I get.
Of course, as you should. Like, on it's just a respectfully fuck you moment, because it's just like,
right.
He's just talking out of his ass for self-serving purposes, and it's like you're not helping these people. You just want to further your own personal agenda. So. Yeah. But with that being said, we're going to have to unfortunately wrap this up. Like, we could be talking for hours and
honestly,
hours.
Honestly, I feel like, this is great. This is a lot of fun.
Well,
we definitely might have to do a part two.
Absolutely. I was about to say, like, we have to continue the conversation at some point. Absolutely. And I absolutely love talking to you. It was great having you with us. Just for our audience to, again, know, like, where they can connect with you. Can you just let us know, like, your socials and your podcasts and all of that?
Yeah, I'm Funny Man Stan on Instagram and Twitter. My podcast and is That's My Shit Podcast, and that's on Instagram as well. My other podcast is Nobody's Movie Review. You can find that on Instagram as well. We're on YouTube. But yeah, Funny Man Stan is pretty much like where to find everything I do.
Okay, well, perfect. Well, with that being said, I'm just going to wrap up. I've been, again, one half of your hosts. You can find me on Instagram at ola.miss.lola. You can follow our podcast page, which is This Black Girl Podcast.
Wonderful. And I am at The Hill Diva on IG. And definitely check us out. Definitely let us know if you like what you heard today, if you didn't like what you heard today, and bring all that smoke to us. And feel free to reach out to the wonderful Stanley, Funny Man Stan IG. That's wonderful. We'll definitely be connecting again. Thanks for coming here.
Thanks
and
for having
being a guest.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our pleasure. Well, with that being said, bye.
Bye.